Kay Tempest is a creative force of nature. From his roots as an MC and spoken word artist on the London scene, he rose to critical acclaim in 2013 by winning the coveted Ted Hughes Prize for Poetry for the work Brand New Ancients. The following year, he was named the Next Generation Poet by the Poetry Book Society, a once-in-a-decade honour. To go with his 8 poetry collections, he's published 4 plays, 1 non-fiction essay, and released 5 albums, 2 of which have been nominated for the Mercury Music Prize. His track, I Stand on the Line, from a 2025 album self-titled, recently won the Best Contemporary Song at the Ivor Novello Awards. He's also very recently published his second novel, Having Spent Life Seeking. The story follows Rothko Taylor, who returns to their hometown after 15 years away, determined to find atonement and connection with the turbulent past they left behind. It's a story that explores gender identity, desire, and addiction, themes that overlap in some ways with Tempest's own life journey. I'm Dylan Bird, and on this episode of Future Perfect, Kay Tempest on art, creativity, and the importance of feeling. We spoke on the cusp of Kay's 2026 Australian tour, and he also talked about why this place has a special place in his heart. So without further ado, here is the remarkable Kay Tempest. Kay Tempest, it really is a huge, huge honour to meet you. How's your morning going over there?
Yes, it's going well so far, thank you. It's like super hot at the moment over here. I think it might be the hottest day on record or something. Last yesterday and today, it seems to be the same. So I'm just trying to take care of my big dog, basically, this morning. So we're out in a park. If you can hear like bird song and stuff like that, it's one of the most wonderful things about South London where I'm from. There's loads of green spaces. You can always find a place with a bit of shade for the dog.
Beautiful. And the listeners won't be able to see this, but I can actually see it looks like there's some sunshine in the background. It's not a stereotypical kind of London backdrop that we're used to.
No, the end of the world never looks so tropical in London. But here we are. This is what we're into.
Yeah. I mean, you've said that every time you come to Australia, you feel profoundly moved by something or someone. And I'm wondering, what memories sit behind that sentiment? Like, are there particular people or interactions that come to mind for you when you think about travelling to Australia?
Oh, yeah. Every time, honestly, every single time I've been there, something really profound has happened. Whether it's been, an encounter with a person, another artist, like the land or landscape in some way. I mean, to kind of begin to go into the story would just like, it would kind of cheapen the experience because I need to sit down with you and tell you for about 3 hours, any one of these encounters, they were really serious. Like people I really resonated with who I found through a kind of sequence of fortuitous events, suddenly here I am with a person who's just blowing my mind, giving me loads of information that I didn't have before. I can't really say any more than that. It just seems to be a place where there's so many people who are so open and who are so it feels like the counterculture, I could say, is so vibrant and intent on its own survival that it's like more concentrated or more powerful or more resonant, I suppose, or somehow more accessible to a stranger, a traveler, someone not from there. Maybe the kind of dominant culture there is so kind of strong that the counterculture has to rise, you know, equal and opposing forces, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I don't really know, but you know, that's a bit of a cop-out way of saying it's a long story.
Yeah, well, whenever you're ready for that 3-hour conversation to take me through every one of those stories, Kay, I'm ready for you. Just from your writing, like I was sort of thinking back to reading your essay on connection, there are some kind of chance encounters with strangers in that book as well. Like I remember one where you speak to a guy, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was a guy who lived in a park in LA, and you talk about this interaction you had with him and how he was holding on to this poetry book that reminded him of his mum and that kind of thing as well. So I'm sort of wondering how much of those chance encounters, those interactions, those conversations you have with people in Australia, like how does that inform your art?
Well, I don't know really, because it's just part of life, isn't it? We're social beings and I live in a city, and I move for my work around places that are populated by lots of people. And I speak to people often and find that interactions with other people, it's crucial, isn't it, to like understanding what life feels like. Because when you're just in your own headspace, you've got no reflective surface, you know, to hear the sound bouncing back off, if you see what I mean. Mm. I don't know how it affects my art. Like I just make what I make out of the moment that I'm in. For sure, anything that I'm working on, everything I've ever felt, seen, thought about, imagined, observed, intuited, it all comes out somehow through what I'm working on. But it's not like intentional really, and there's what's intentional in the process of making the work will be the craft of whatever it is that I'm trying to grapple with. So how the deeper register encounters that I've had with people affect that, it's a bit mysterious to me. But for sure that people that I meet, it will do something to me and I'll be impacted by them, and maybe they'll start a chain of thoughts off in my mind that might lead me towards landing on something that I want to write about 6 years later. But I take it One step at a time, really, with the work I'm making. I just try and stay down there in the engine room and just try and work on whatever the pressing concern is, whatever the demand of the work is, kind of from the inside out, from the narrative, from the content, from the character. You know, I try and just keep inside the rhyme scheme, the form, whatever it is, whatever the demand of whatever it is I'm working on. Yeah, it's from the inside out, really.
And I suppose that's that sense of connection with others, and also, I don't know, absorbing the stories, the words, the art of others sort of runs through your practice as well. I mean, I need to congratulate you for your very recently announced award and Ivor Novello Award for Best Contemporary Song for I Stand on the Line, the track that leads off your 2025 album, Self-Titled. So, I mean, huge congratulations on that. And I mean, it's not the first of the awards that you've won. Do those kind of public accolades mean much to you? Like, how do they sit with you to have that sort of public recognition and embrace of your work?
Thank you. Ivor Novello's is amazing because it's an award about songwriting. And it's like voted for and judged by songwriters, and songwriting is, for me, it was my first love. It's what got me into all this. Lyrics is that was the beginning. Like the way that I feel about lyricism is, I just have this deep gratitude for lyricism, and it's changed my life. It's saved my life. It's given me my life. And then through lyricism, my own lyrics and other people studying other people's lyricism, I found my way, you know, towards like prose. It kind of unlocked words for me. That was the first step on this bridge that I'm still kind of building between feeling and experience or intention and connection or whatever it is. But this bridge that I can walk through my life with words, that was the start. So the fact that my songwriting has been heard and thought about and discussed in a room of songwriters, I mean, I feel extremely lucky and grateful. And it kind of blows my mind a little bit because of all of the different parts of my life when you know, I would have done anything to have had my song heard by some of those people, anything. And I couldn't work out how to get a record deal, couldn't work out how to get a gig, couldn't work it out. Spent 10 years like smashing my head against the brick wall, just didn't know how to do it. But those 10 years where I couldn't get into the music industry, my creativity was so like powerful in my system. I was still doing as much as I could. And that's what led me onto these other journeys towards writing plays, writing for the theatre. And then eventually like writing these long form narrative poems and, you know, then to a novel. It, funnily enough, the dance of all of these different forms happened because of my relationship with songwriting, basically. And because I couldn't quite make it in music, I was like dealing with all my frustration by being very activated in different areas. And how wonderful and how beautiful that I've had all these experiences, because also it makes me a better songwriter.
It's remarkable how you work across different art forms. Of course, poetry, spoken words, you know, you've written multiple plays and now 5 albums as well. There's a nonfiction essay on connection, which I referenced before, and now 2 novels that have come 10 years apart. The most recent one came out just last month, Having Spent Life Seeking. And I mean, it must be such a thrill for you, I imagine, to, I guess, finally unleash those stories on the world. I mean, writing a novel, I imagine, takes a lot longer than putting pen to paper for a song. I mean, I'm sure some songs take a long time as well, or a poem, but it just strikes me that you spend so much time with these characters, like walking through life with them. How does it feel to have their stories out in the world and for others to be able to live with those people and walk in their shoes for a moment?
Thanks for even asking that, because it's like, it's just nice to think about the characters that way. It's nice to hear you talk about them that way as well, because that's what it's like. They're people that you spend a lot of time with, that I spent a lot of time with. I've been working on the novel that was just published. I was working on that solidly, like solidly for 4 years. And probably 2 years before that, before anybody saw a word of it, I didn't show anyone a word. I had to get to the end of the first draft, which took a few years in itself. And like, so if you think about spending that much time with somebody kind of one-on-one every day, you're thinking about them every night. And then I was also on tour and I was putting a record out and I was doing promo. So in between interviews like this, I would be like going, if I was... It's hard to explain. I would be like leaving a full day of interviews to go and sit down in the courtyard of the hotel that I'd be staying in, because I would have to have gone to like Paris or Berlin or wherever it is you have to go. And then rather than going to have lunch or something, I would just be working on the novel. So they also came with me to these weird places that I didn't feel particularly comfortable, where I had to talk to journalists all day and staying in these, you know, whatever. Oh, just all of the stuff about putting work out when the kind of big spotlight's on your head and on your body and on you. Then I would be retreating from that by spending time with these characters in their world, thinking about them. It was like such a full, like, suction away from all of that stuff and into this other world. And the thing about that world is it has to have as much, it has to have as many laws and principles and like governing consistencies as this world, ones that we don't even think about, but that it means that we feel safe in the reality and the fabric of this world, things like gravity, time, light. So the world of your own creation has to have that kind of physics as well, even though it's a narrative kind of physics. So I need to know exactly. So for example, for a family of 4, over the course of 40 years, I need to know exactly what's happened for each of them and when important things happened in their lives that the other members of the family may not know about. There may have been a crossover. It may have been that in 2006, for all 4 members of that family, something profound happened. And I need to know that, because if we meet them in 2007, having a passing interaction, I need to know what's charging that interaction. I need to know why they're responding like that. So all that to say, you know, you're right. It takes more time, for me anyway, to write a novel than it does to write a song, because a song is its own contained world. And a novel... when you meet the characters in a novel, you'll see like a little island, you know, but there's a whole mountain underneath that island of work that's been done and thought that's been done. And so in terms of how I feel about letting it go, I feel a bit stunned that it's finally complete, because it took up so much in my headspace. And I feel really grateful for this story because it got me through a lot, and I clung tightly to it, and it carried me through some heavy stuff. And I feel grateful for the people in my life who fed into the story. I feel grateful for the characters for choosing me, and I'm excited for the fact that its life begins where my life with it is kind of over, but the life of the novel is now beginning.
It's a really beautiful thing. And I mean, I'm interested, there are, I guess, some parallels that readers might be tempted to make between Rothko in some sense and your own story, someone who's experiencing, you know, gender transition and uses different pronouns throughout the book as well. I mean, there's so much more to the story and different characters too. But was there a moment where Rothko as a character sort of emerged to you and you started walking alongside them or felt them in your presence?
It was that Rothko was the first character that that I met, really. And they, I suppose, where characters come from is a bit of a mystery. I think they began as a friend of mine, or inspired very much by a friend of mine who I just absolutely adored. And sometimes with writing, it's like a way of giving time to something you didn't give time to at the time, you know? It's a way of like re-energizing a moment where you wish maybe you'd acted differently, or you just feel so tender about that moment. You just, its poignancy lives, and it creates this kind of fertile environment for a scene to grow out of. I can't really tell you like where Rothko came from. I don't know. I wish I knew, because then I could go back there and ask another character to come and hang out with me. But I don't know. Then this really, what you have to do is just spend time, just keep working, keep writing, keep putting them into places and keep listening to them. And, you know, there's this moment where what I find the frustrating part of writing is that you're kind of putting the characters in places, you're asking them to do things, but you spend enough time getting to know them and they begin to kind of grow into their own people. So you know what's gone into their creation, but there's this other element of how they behave, how they respond, how they talk, that it's them, it's the character. And suddenly you go from being the person telling them what to say to being the person like listening to them in conversation with someone else and just writing it down. When that happens, it's just the same with when you get to know people, you start to observe them through their behavior, you know, and you're just like, oh, that you're the kind of person that does that because you just did that, you know, like it's really a beautiful and mysterious and extremely frustrated practice. I mean, novelists who are better than me will have a different take on it. This is just what I'm saying today. It's important to say that first thing in the morning, you know, I'm worried about my dog in the heat, and like we have this chat and I say this, but tomorrow I might have said something else. So
your work, I guess, you know, consuming it from the outside and not knowing you, it strikes me as an incredibly sort of deep feeling person. And I guess the benefit that we get from reading your poetry, from watching you perform, from listening to your music, is that in some way we can feel the world a little bit more closely, with a little bit more, I guess, impact than we might be able to as we move through the day ourselves. But I mean, it must be an incredible challenge to be feeling that deeply as well, and also working across different art forms and telling these stories through music, through poetry, through the novel form as well. When you embark on a new project, like, does it feel like you need to step out into the unknown a little bit and feel like you are taking a risk with the experience of feeling and also the sense of actually finishing a work? Like, a novel is a massive undertaking. How important is it to you to be stepping out into that unknown and having a fear that it might not necessarily all work out?
My relationship with my work is so beautiful. Like, the way it is to be creative is so necessary for all of us. We all have it. We all have this capacity to express ourselves and meet ourselves there in that place of creativity. Then what I have on top of that access to the creativity is that I've like nurtured a life, and I've been lucky enough to have been given so many opportunities in terms of like collaborators and the place where I'm from, and the times where performance was available to me, I could just go and busk. I could do these open mics, all this. So creativity was something that was alive and flourishing, and it was something that I could be involved in actively as a teenager and as a young adult. So all this to say that my relationship with it has been vital, alive, and unobstructed since I was a teenager. And when I look at people in my life whose ideas are not given value, whose creativity is not made important by anyone else in their life or in the world or in society, I can see it's extremely painful for them. And it makes me feel even more like willful in my gratitude for this incredible practice that I have access to. It's so abundantly powerful. If I didn't have my writing, I couldn't imagine having got through life, having got to this point, still being here without it, to be honest. So when I step out into a new project, no, it's not, I don't really fear that I'm not going to end, like I won't finish it. It's not really like that. But my only problem is like trying to rein it in a little bit. I have so many ideas. I have so much passion for it. All I want to do every minute of the day is be writing or in the studio or making work or writing songs or, you know, but actually I've also got a life, you know, I've got a family, I've got like, I'm just a person in the world as well. And that means I also have to exist in this world as well as in that world where everything makes much more sense to me over there. But if I could just make music, you know, 26 hours a day, I would. I adore it. It makes so much sense to me. And you're talking about deep feeling and everything like that. That's just all I've known, really. So it's actually strange to me that other people aren't like that. But, you know, maybe everyone is like that. It's just that the world is so constructed that it's dangerous for us to be in connection with those feelings all the time. And also the world is exhausting. Lives are exhausting. So what good does it do you if you've got to work every day and then you've got to take care of the kids and blah, blah, blah. What good does it do you to be in touch with your feelings? Well, I just think that whenever I've got to that point of numbness and detachment, the thing that brings me back to myself is music and you know, novels and lyrics, other people's. And because I've received so much from this, that's why I give my life, because it's creativity has given me my life. So I give my life to creativity. Like music saved my life. Now I give my life to music. You know, that's just what it is.
Yeah, and we're so grateful you do, Kay. I just want to ask lastly, I mean, we started off this conversation with you explaining how you've had these great memories in Australia. You're set to come here very, very shortly for a string of shows, including here in Melbourne at Rising Festival. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to doing when you're back on our shores?
Yeah, I just want to see my friends up there that I only ever see every 2 years when I come to play a show. There's a few people that are just really, really, really nice people, really sweet people. And we have our little, what do they call it? What is it called? Biennial, when it's once every 2 years.
I always get confused, but I think it is, yeah.
It seems to be that I come to Australia every couple of years when I put a record out, which is extremely lucky. I feel very, very lucky about that. I just can't wait to get on stage and see what happens up there, you know, and play the show and see if it reaches people. I feel like the music lovers that I've met at festivals in Australia, it's an interesting reception. It feels like an open, willing, grounded kind of response. That's people seem thoughtful and willing to go with me to where I'm going. So we'll just see what happens. I'm excited to just get there and see what happens. I try to have no expectation and just take things as it comes, because I think expectation can just, it's like the enemy of creativity, isn't it? It stops things being delightful.
Well, may it be delightful when you return here. Kay Tempest, it's been so great to have you on the show. A complete honour. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for thinking so much about my work, and thanks for talking to me. I appreciate you. See you later.
Thanks for listening to this podcast edition of Future Perfect, a radio show on Triple R. The show goes to air weekly on Monday mornings Australia time. You can catch up on past episodes, feature interviews and music selections at rrr.org.au and just search Future Perfect. I'm really keen for this show to have a presence in podcast land as well. So if you could please help out and follow the pod and give it a rating or review in your favourite podcast platform, that would be great. If you want to get in touch, you can hit me up on my Instagram at futureperfectrrr or via the RRR website. Hope you enjoyed the episode and I'll catch you next time.